Chi Yaakov, the beginning of Parshas Vayechi, has two components to it. Two components that seem to be discrete, but then get clearly, strongly reconnected. Vayechi Yaakov Eretz Mitzrayim Shvaesrei Shana. Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim for 17 years. Yaakov is getting old. He's approaching death, as the Pasuk says. And he calls his son Yosef, and he asks him to do with him chesed ve'emes, kindness and truth, or what we often say, the chesed shel emes. Anosik b'reini v'mitzrayim, don't bury me in Mitzrayim. Shachafti me'aveisayim, sasani Mitzrayim, paratani b'fur asam. If I die, I want you to carry from Mitzrayim and bury me with my forefathers. Vayemar anechi aseket v'recha, Yosef commits, he says, I will do as you say. Vayemar hishavali, swear to me, vayishavali, and he swears to him, vayishtachu Yisrael al-rei shamita. And Yaakov bows down al Reish Hamita at the head of the bed. Yaakov is grateful. Yaakov appreciates the commitment of Yosef, and he bows down. Rashi says, "Tala beidna sagidle." He says that even a tala, even a fox, beidne, when it's his season, when it's his time, sagidle, you bow down to him. In other words, Yaakov was bowing down to Yosef, and Yosef is. That Yaakov, the father, should bow down to Yosef, the son. Yosef's not the oldest son. But Yosef was the king. And here Yosef's role as the king was being used for Yaakov's benefit, to be able to get him out, to bury him in Eretz Canaan. And so Yaakov Inu bows down to him. Alternatively, says Rashi, Davarachi al Shaisa mitase shlema v'laheya by Rasha. He bowed down now in gratitude to Hashem, because he saw that his mita, his bed, his family was complete, that there was no Russia within his family. Because even Yosef, who was a melech, was a king, which is corrupt, which is a recipe often for corruption. Even though Yosef was taken amongst the Umayyads, he was separated from the Jewish people, another recipe for corruption of his values. But he had both these things, and he was Ayman Bitzitka, he was still righteous. When Yaakov here bows down to Yosef, we have to notice something significant. And that is, that this is, finally, the kiyum, the fulfillment of the second dream which Yosef HaTzadik had. Yosef HaTzadik had the first dream about his 11 brothers bowing down to him, represented by the 11 sheaves. Hamolech timlech aleinu yimashal timshalvanu. And then he had a second dream about the Shemesh, the Yoreach, the sun and the moon, and the Achad Asar Kechavim, and the 11 stars, Mishtachavim Li, bowing down to me. That was a prophecy of a second stage, of not just Yosef's brothers bowing down to him, but of Yosef's parents bowing down to him as well. Yaakov Avinu, when he heard that dream, he said, Havai, Navai, Ani, V'imcha, V'yachechol, Ishtachavais L'char, said, you think I and your mother and your brothers were going to come and bow down to you to the ground? Yeah, indeed, of course, that is what Yosef thought, and that was what the dream was going to fulfill. Yaakov pointed out, perhaps, between the lines, as Rashi says there, it can't be, because your mother, Rachel, is already dead. Right? She had already died before this. She can't come and bow down. Okay, so maybe it will be fulfilled through Bilha. Maybe this is an example of Ein Chaloyim B'lai Dvorim B'Teilim. There's no such thing as a dream without something in it that's not meaningful. But perhaps as we go along tonight, we'll understand a different element, different aspect of the fulfillment of even that part of the dream, of, right, Ani ve'imcha, me and your mother and your brothers coming and bowing down to you. But this was Yosef's dream, that this was going to happen. This was the nevuah, the prophecy which he got through the vehicle of the dream, that this was going to happen. And when did it happen? You know, we see in the beginning of last week's Parsha, towards the beginning of last week's Parsha, L'yochol Yosef li'isapek, right, we discussed before, Yosef couldn't hold back. Right? Yosef wanted to hold back. He wanted not even to reveal himself after Yehuda's impassioned plea with him to let Yehuda replace Binyamin. He wanted to hold back, says the Meshech Chachma, he wanted to hold back because the same way he staged this whole thing, so that the 11 brothers would bow down to him. That's why he didn't give them his identity until Binyamin came and bowed down to him. So he also wanted to wait for a second stage, for he would hold on to Binyamin, and Yaakov would come down to Mitzrayim to visit Binyamin, and then Yaakov would bow down to him, and then he would say, "Ah, I'm really Yosef." But he couldn't hold back anymore. For whatever reason, he couldn't hold back anymore, so he had to reveal himself. So Yaakov didn't bow down to him until now. Until now, in the beginning of this week's parsha, when Yaakov comes to Yosef, and he says, "Yosef, please come, and Yosef, please, when I die, take me to be buried in Eretz Yisrael." Then, when Yosef says yes, "Vayishtachu Yisrael al Reish Hamita," then Yaakov Avinu bows down, and he bows down to Yosef. "Vayishtachu Yisrael al Reish Hamita, al Shehem Itasei Shleima." So what's happening here? What's the idea that precisely now, dafka now at this point in time, Yaakov Avinu finally bows down to Yosef? 17 years after they've come together, now Yaakov Avinu fulfills this idea of bowing down to Yosef. Something to consider. We understand that, of course, on some level, Yaakov here is asking Yosef for something. He's asking him for something. So in that sense, there's a deference to Yosef. But is that fundamentally different than when Yaakov Avinu first came to Mitzrayim? For the past 17 years, he's been living in Mitzrayim because Yosef said, "I'm going to take care of you here." Right? He encouraged Yaakov to come. So there, Yaakov hadn't asked him. Yosef had offered, had encouraged, had invited. In this case, Yaakov Avinu asked Yosef. So therefore, since he asked Yosef, now specifically, he bows down to Yosef. It's possible, but is it really enough? When Yosef would take Yaakov Avinu down to Eretz Canaan, we will find a magnificent thing happens there. In the end of our parsha, in the end of Parshas Vayechi, when Yosef takes them down, when all the brothers go down with Yaakov Avinu, so the pasuk says, "Vayavayu ad Geiren Ha'otad." They came until Geiren Ha'otad, name of a place. Geiren is usually a threshing area of the Otad, and Otad is a thorn bush. It's a strange expression. Asher be'ever ha'yardin va'yisbedu shom misbeit gadol v'kaved ma'ay. There was a very intense eulogy conducted there. Va'yar yeshev ar taknani es ha'evel v'gayr na'atot. The inhabitants saw it. They said, "Wow, there's an intense evil, an intense grieving for Mitzrayim." And therefore it was called Ovel Mitzrayim. It was called the place of grieving of Mitzrayim until Asher be'ever ha'yardin. So what's gayr na'atot? So the Rashi says, "Al shem ha'mu'ura," because of the event. Shabo kol malchei Knan u'nesiyei Yishmael le'milchama. All the kings of Knan and princes of Yishmael came to fight. Who are these people coming invading from Mitzrayim? They came to defend themselves. But the Kaven Shiro, Kisrei shel Yosef toli ba'arayne shel Yaakov. When they saw the crown of Yosef on the casket of Yaakov, omdu kulan v'tolu ba'kisrayim. They all came and they added their crowns. They made it into an, they saw it was a funeral, a state funeral. They joined the state funeral. And so he explains that's Geirin Ha'atad. A Geirin is a threshing floor where food is produced. You need security. So they would, instead of having barbed wire fences, they had thorn bushes. And that's Geirin Ha'atad, surrounded by thorn bushes. So this too, the casket of Yaakov, instead of being attacked, it was protected. The protection started with the crown of Yosef and continued with all the other nations, all the other kings adding their crowns, making it into something so stately. So what's happening here? What's being described here? As Yosef is leading in the burial of Yaakov Avinu in Canaan, Yaakov Avinu is getting a tremendous show of honor, of respect. Of respect from everybody. From the Mitzrim, he got. But now it's spreading back to Canaan. It's to Yishmael, Yaakov Avinu, who didn't necessarily live his life being respected all the time as a prince. He lived his life as a nirdaf, as a person who was pursued, who suffered so much in so many steps and stages along the way. But here, through Yosef taking him to bury him in Mitzrayim, now Yaakov Avinu gets kavod melachim. He gets the honor of kings. And he gets the honor of kings as an adjunct to Yosef because of his connection to Yosef. In a sense, it's through bowing down to Yosef, it's the honor of Yosef that somehow spills over to be the honor of Yaakov Avinu. So in that sense, we could see again into this event, specifically the burial of Yaakov, comes with significant things. It's a little hard to understand because even Yaakov in Mitzrayim, he did have honor because he was part of the royal family, because he was the father of the king of Mitzrayim, of Yosef. But we know that when he goes back to Canaan, it's more significant. When he goes back to Eretz Yisrael and all the kings join in, it's not just a local thing in Mitzrayim, and he gets even more of that because of Yosef. It's even more significant. So in this story, you understand to some degree how Yaakov bows down to Yosef, even as Yosef is paying these respects towards his father Yaakov Avinu. That's the beginning of it. But let's try to go a little bit further. Try to go a little bit further to the second paragraph in the Parsha, the other paragraph, the other part of the story that's told before Sheni in this week's Parsha. Vayichi achar advarim hele. It was even after these things. Vayomer liYosef, and Yosef, somebody said to Yosef, Yosef was told, Hinei avichach vayelech, your father is sick. Whereas the first time Yaakov Avinu recognized on his own that he was getting closer to death and he called Yosef, but there was no sickness that was manifest in Yaakov, he just knew that his time was coming. Now Yaakov is ill. And now, instead of Yaakov summoning Yosef, Yaakov is told that Yosef is told that Yaakov is ill, and Yosef comes on his own. And he comes, and Vayischazek Yisrael Vayeshev al Amita. Yaakov strengthens himself and he sits up. Again, says Rashi, on the same lines as we had before, Afal Pishu Bini, even though he's my son, so why do I have to sit up for him? Melechu, he's a king. V'achalik le'kovet, and I have to show him respect. He's not bowing. But again, this is yet another step in the fulfillment of the achad osar kechavim, along with the Shemesh Yoreach, the 11 stars, along with the sun and the moon, along with his father and his mother, bowing down to him. So Yaakov is again showing this kavod, showing this honor to Yosef. What happens? So Yaakov says to Yosef, Hashem appeared to me, beluz, be'eretz Kenan, vayivarechasi, and he blessed me, vayemer elai, and he said to me, I'm going to make you fruitful, multiply, make you into a community of nations. I'll give this land to your children following you as a permanent holding. The two children which you had born before I came to you to Mitzrayim, Lihem, I want them to be mine. Ephraim and Menashe, I want them to be like Reuven v'Shimon for me. And the children you have subsequently, they'll go under the heading of Menashe and Ephraim. So Yaakov tells Yosef, Hashem promised me nations would come from me. Rashi plugs in a little bit, that what do you mean? How could he tell me nations are coming from me? I only had one son left to be had, only Binyamin. So it must be I had other Shvatim to be born. Who would those be? Those would be your children. I'm making those your children. The children which he said I would still have, those are your children. Ephraim and Menashe, your children will be like my children. Your children that you had before I came down here, when you were independent, before I was on the scene, the children you have afterwards, okay, they're going to be like everybody else. The children that you had on your own, they're going to be for me like Ephraim and Menashe, like my own children. Ephraim and Menashe, Reuven and Shimon, Yehuda. That's what he says to him. And then he comes back and he says something which seems to be from left field. And when I was coming home from Paddan Aram, Rachel died on me as I was traveling while there was still Kivras Eretz Lavei Efrasa, and I buried her right there. I buried her right there, B'derech Efrasi Beis Lachem. What's that verse doing there? Why out of the blue is Yaakov Avinu explaining to Yosef about the burial of Rachel Imeinu? Says Rashi, Yaakov Avinu said to himself, I know Yosef is probably upset. I asked him to schlep me, excuse the expression, all the way to Eretz Canaan. What did I do with his mother? His mother Rachel, I didn't even take to the Maris HaMachpelah. Right? She died along the way, and I buried her right there. Why didn't I take her to go to be buried in Maris HaMachpelah? So he's probably upset at me, and he's saying he's asking me to take him all the way when he didn't take my mother all the way. And that's why he felt he had to explain. Says Rashi, what's the explanation? He brings a whole beautiful and very famous Midrashic explanation that the reason was because, after all, Rachel was going to be positioned in that spot very importantly. Because that's the spot, just like they were entering Eretz Yisrael through that road, the Jews would eventually end up exiting Eretz Yisrael through that road, and Rachel would be there davening for her children who had gone into exile. Rachel mevaka al banah. So she plays a critical role, and that's why I left her there. Of course, it's very hidden in the pasuk. The whole interpretation of Rashi, every aspect of it is very hidden in the pasuk. And more than, and other Rishonim, okay, so they don't go as midrashic. They say, you know, what can I do? You're wondering why I didn't bury her. Same question as Rashi, but she died on the way. You know, and it was childbirth. I couldn't move her. You know, it's not considered dignified. And there were other issues. We had all the children there at the time. They were young children. What was I supposed to do? I couldn't really reroute anybody. There was no embalmers there. You know, all kinds of explanations. But again, for the same punchline, to explain why I couldn't take her, but I'm asking you to take me an even greater distance. But there's a fundamental question on all of these interpretations, and that is, why didn't Yaakov say this to Yosef when he asked him to take him to Maris HaMachpelah? Why is he waiting for now? Why is he waiting for now? Why does he first ask him, and Yosef says yes, fine, terrific, he bows down. Then, at a later meeting, he's sick, he comes, and first he tells him about Reuven and Shimon, Ephraim and Manasseh, and then he comes and gives him this story. What's happening here? The Medrash asks a famous question. Famous question. The question is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it that the Imahos would be a chorus? Why did Hashem make it that the matriarchs of the Jewish people would wait so long to be able to have children? Sarah waited till she was 90 years old. Rivka, okay, so she was younger, she was 40 years old, but she was married for a long time, a very long time before they had the children, right? Part of the beginning Parshas told us. Right, he had to daven noichach ishtoi ki akorai. She was barren. Rachel, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it that the Imahos were akoris? Right, so everybody knows the classic answer, which is found in the Medrash, which is found in the Gemara. What's the reason? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu yearns. He's misavet l'tfilos an shel tzadikim. He yearns the prayers of the righteous. But the Medrash says another reason. Fascinating reason. The Medrash says it in very picturesque terms, beyond the scope of what we're going to talk about here today, such that when one reads the Medrash, one doesn't understand immediately. It sounds very strange. But the punchline of what the Medrash is saying, Medrash Rabbah, when he went up in Parsha Manhei, in Bereishis, says the Medrash, the idea is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that once they had children, then the focus would be on the children. And before they would have children, then there would be a stronger connection between the Av and the Em themselves. That's the way it goes. Physically, time-wise, in so many ways, the connection between the husband and wife, as husband and wife, changes radically when the child is on the scene. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to leave it, wanted to postpone it, so that the Avos and Imois would first be together as the husband and wife before they would have the child. It wasn't their choice. It wasn't what the Avos and Imois chose to do. It was how HaKadosh Baruch Hu manipulated that whatever their efforts to have children, Hashem said, not yet, not yet, not yet, because there's something which has to be formed between these two together. And the presence of the child will sidetrack that. It's a great chiddush that's found in the Medrash. But the idea is a very important one. It's an important one that we see as we learn through the sugyos, the issues, the situations, one by one of the Avos and Imois. We know how different Avram and Sarah were from each other. Avram was Av, father, chesed, and Sarah was Sar, princess, like a malka, like a queen, stronger, she was din. They approach things differently. But over time, Avraham Avinu learns how to be strong, Yorei Elokim, fearing of God, you know, doing what Sarah says, learning Sarah's lessons, and Sarah suddenly becomes one who bursts out in laughter, in joyous laughter. Tzchaikas Ali Elokim. She's filled, overfilled with this joyous, joyous laughter. So Sarah learns a little bit of the chesed of Avraham. Yitzchak and Rivka. Yitzchak is strong, is din, in a certain sense like his mother. Yitzchak is a product of Akedas Yitzchak, right? Rivka. Rivka is seen for her chesed, her proactive chesed. She gives Eliezer to drink, and she says, one second, but your animals need also. Right? Much more of the midah of chesed. And there, two of them are there, and we understand that they didn't marry their carbon copies. They married their opposites. They married somebody different than them. And somehow, there was a blending which happened between these. You understand that it's for this purpose that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had these specific pairings occur. And we understand as well that therefore it's important for this one to be with that one for a while. So that, forget the child that they create that's a combination of the kaychais of both of them. But what they themselves would become would be a combination of the kaychais of both of them. And we often talk about this when we learn in Parshas Vayetze about the whole dynamic between Rachel and Leah. And this is really where we're going to go to now. And the picture for this we give is the pasuk in Parshas Bereishis, where it describes the original marriage, and it describes it with a phrase that's a double entendre, that has a double meaning. The pasuk says, "Alkein yazev ish esaviv v'etzimai v'davak v'ishtei v'yuv v'asar achad." Therefore, or henceforth, man will leave his father and mother, attach himself to his wife, and they will become levasar echad, as one flesh. So what does it mean they will become as one flesh? Says Rashi, because the husband and wife, if Hashem grants them success to conceive a child, so then that child is a single body, one flesh, that's a combination of the father and the mother. From the father and the mother comes forth a child that's one flesh, that's the bond, that's the combination of the two of them. That's what Rashi says. Says the Ramban, no, I don't think that's the pshat in the pasuk, because if that was the pshat in the pasuk, it could have said, Al-Kain, Yazov, Giraffe, Es Aviv, Ves Imai, Vidavak, Be Giraffet. It's true of every creature in the animal kingdom, in the bird kingdom. The male is one, the female is another. They get together, they conceive a child, and the child is a combination of the two of them. The pasuk seems to be describing something which is special about humans, about other. Oh, it's not good for man to be alone. I'll make him, and he's a connected, and he finds her. Wow! If what it describes is just the biology of the male and female conceiving a child together, forget about it. Says the Ramban, no, what it means is that the man and woman become like one. That they have a relationship. Oh, animals don't have that. Animals, they mate and then they're gone. They have no connection between the male and the female other than just the mating and finished. Yeah, the child is some fusion of the two of them, but not them. But by a human being, there really is the vasar echad. There is where the two of them come together. They feel like they're one person. They were, after all, once upon a time one person. Hashem broke off a piece of Adam to make Chava, and now they come back together again, and they feel like, oh, we're really one person. Etzem me'atzamai, vasar mi'besari. There's a connection between the two of them. So if you would make a diagram to show it, Rashi's pshat, you'd have the male over here, excuse me, I wish I had a blackboard. You have the male over here, and a female over here, and then there's a child over here, and there's two lines that go like this. And the way the male and female are connected are down through this line to this dot, to this child. Whereas according to the Ramban, there's the male over here and the female over here, and there's a line that goes just between the two of them. There's no bridge. There's nobody else. Just the two of them forges connection to each other. And that's the way. That's another way. Excuse me. So says the Medrash that, you know, if they're going to start right away with this, then there won't be any of this. There won't be any connection up there. First, we HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to grant them the connection up there before they would create the connection down here. And to some degree, as we discussed when we learned Vayetze, and we will go along to now, that was some of the difference between Rachel and Leah. Because Rachel, Yaakov Avinu, clearly felt a connection to Rachel. From the moment he saw her, he felt a love for Rachel. There was an immediate connection between the two of them. With Leah, he felt no connection. The only relationship that's described with Leah, personally, between Yaakov and Leah is not a good one. Snua Leah. She was hated, or, you know, you want to be gentle, say hated means, well, relative to Rachel, he didn't like her as much. Right? Whatever it is, it wasn't very, very nice. Right? It wasn't solid, strong between the two of them. What happened? Says the Medrash, when Yaakov Avinu and Leah had a child right away, so then he discovered that, you know, he got up in the morning, right? They were together, he got up in the morning, oh, it's Leah. But he says, how am I going to divorce the mother of my children? Meaning that even if there was nothing like that, but this kept them together. This kept them together. And it's two aspects, two models. Yosef was the son of Yaakov and Rachel. Yaakov and Rachel, who reportedly, supposedly, had this connection between the two of them, this connection which would make it that he would learn from her and she would learn from him, and they would, you know, be blending together as one. Yosef was the son of Yaakov and Rachel. And as we know, when we look back in the Parshias, we see that the connection between Yaakov and Rachel didn't necessarily live up to its original promise. Tragically, it didn't necessarily live up to its original promise. Oh, Rachel really, really, really wanted to have this connection to Yaakov Avinu through having a child. Yaakov was a little bit, hoveli banim, give me children, otherwise make son, otherwise I am dead. Yaakov responded to that a little bit coolly. He didn't say the words, but you almost hear the words which Elkanah said to Chana, his wife, who also was faced with a situation where there was another wife, Peninu, had many children, but Chana did not. And Elkanah said to Chana, you know, aren't I better for you than Asara Bonim, than Tenza? Right? What am I, chopped liver? Yaakov Avinu, right? Give me children, otherwise I'm dead. What about the connection between the two of us?
But Rachel wanted to have children. And it's not for us to discuss now all the signs of it, but when you look along the way, you see different signs of the gap which continued to exist between Yaakov and Rachel. And because that gap continued to exist, Yosef doesn't become less important, he becomes more important. Because to the extent that this doesn't happen, then the idea of the strength of Yaakov being mixed with the strength of Rachel, that doesn't happen on this level, will only happen on this level. And so Yosef becomes essential, Yosef becomes critical. So let me try to explain to you what we mean here and where we're going. Yosef is not a son like the other sons of Yaakov. Yosef is seen by Chazal as being Evan. Right? In the words of our Parsha, Misham Reya Evan Yisrael. You know what Evan is? Evan is Av Ben. Father, son. Yosef is somewhere between being a child, being a Shevet. One of the 12 Shvatim, isn't he? But on the other hand, he's not. You look on the Choshen Mishpat, it says Yosef's name. Right? But if you would look on other listings of the Shvatim, you won't find the name of Yosef. Yosef is above being listed amongst the Shvatim. Who's listed instead? His children, Menashe and Ephraim. His children, Menashe and Ephraim, are considered like Yaakov Avinu's children, which makes Yosef like Yaakov. In a certain way, he's like one of the boys, he's one of his brothers. But in another way, he's above his brothers. His children are considered like first generation Shvatim. That's a sign of him being an Av on some level. It's part of Yosef rising above the rest of them. Hamalei tim lechaleinu, mashal tim shalbanu. Oh, at least over the other Shvatim. Even over Yaakov Avinu. Well, maybe to some degree there too. Because if after all, if Yosef's children are considered to be like Yaakov's children, right? Yosef can't be considered as a shevet. Isn't that something less of a deference of Yosef to Yaakov? Oh, you might say, no, it's the other way around. It's because Yosef is so loved by Yaakov that he says, I cherish your grandchildren as if they were my own children. Yeah, it's certainly a way to look at it. But there's this other way to look at it too. And that other way to look at it is demonstrated by what? By the fact that it was only those children who were born ad bayi eilecha mitzrayma. Specifically during that time that I wasn't near you. What these children you had when you were on your own before I came to Mitzrayim. The children which were born of the independent Yosef. Those children are my equals. When you were there independent, on your own, where you didn't have kibud av, the years of the lack of kibud av in the life of Yosef. During those years, Yosef was Yaakov's equal. Fathering, so to speak, his own brothers, his shev, the shvatim, that would be equal to his father's children. Yosef, in that sense, is somehow taking on a new level. That's what Yaakov Avinu makes clear when Yosef brings his children. Your son Yosef is coming to you. And Yaakov sits up to honor him as a king. He doesn't even know that the boys are there. You know, that's the shocker, right? The last two psukim before Shmini is, oh, who are these? Who are these kids? What do you mean? You were just talking about them. You said they're like your own children. Right? Is that why you don't recognize them? Right? Because you're at work all the time? Like, what's going on over here? Right? No. Dafka. Right? Dafka. He was speaking to Yosef. Yaakov was speaking to Yosef. And he's saying to Yosef, you know, You're not the same as the rest. You're not the same as the rest. You're a level above. You're almost like my equal. And therefore, your children are like going to be like Ephraim and Manasseh to me. So why is Yosef only like almost like Yaakov's equal? Why is he given this position? It's not just a bechira, birthright. The birthright is the oldest son. So he's special position. But to say, it's like Ephraim and Manasseh, like Reuven and Shimon. Like, what's that from? Because Yosef brings something to the Jewish people that Yaakov did. That Yaakov could have, perhaps, but didn't. Yaakov could have, by being that blend with Rachel, something would have happened to Yaakov. But because that blend with Rachel didn't happen in its entirety, so then where would it come? Where would that blending occur? It would occur only in the children that Yaakov wrote. Yes. And what's the greatest sign, what's the greatest indication of the fact that Yaakov and Rachel didn't really come together? Vani b'vay mi padan meisa vay Rachel baderech v'yit kivras eretz l'vay efrasa v'ekbura asham baderech efrasi beis lachem. The biggest sign of the fact that they didn't come together is the fact that Rachel lies by her lonesome on the side of the road. That Rachel died early. So when Yaakov came and settled down in Eretz Yisrael, he had just one of those sisters as his wife, Leah. And that when Yaakov would die, he would lie forever with Leah, not with Rachel. That's a glaring, glaring void, emptiness in the connection of Yaakov and Rachel. And that is what Yaakov was explaining to Yosef. It's that, as a cause, no, as a symptom, that makes you so important. Because if I'm lying here and Rachel's lying over there, if I'm asking you to take me to bury me with Leah, you understand that whatever happened between me and Rachel, I'm not taking with me to the grave. I'm not bringing Rachel. Rachel's not a part of me. If she was a part of me, we would be buried together. But instead, the only place where we're going to find this combination between me and Rachel is in you. And that's what gives you the status of an av or something different. Because that special blend, that special mix, has to come from you. What is that special mix? Yes. Sorry? Correct. He didn't seem to have the personal connection with Leah. But the connection with Leah, which he had, which was the bulk of his children, and there was no midah of Leah that Yaakov Avinu, that we don't describe them as being these two different beings that Yaakov Avinu had to blend into himself, like Avram and Sarah, and Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Rachel. Describe in a moment what we talk about with this Yaakov and Rachel connection, that Yaakov would be missing with Rachel, but wouldn't be missing with Leah. See, because Rachel, what Rachel to the greatest degree represented, and what she potentially would have brought out in Yaakov Avinu, is that which we know was the missing piece from Yaakov in the beginning. Yaakov Avinu was the tzaddik Ish Tamim Yoshev Aholim, the righteous person, right? The pure person, straightforward, honest person who dwelled in the tents, of study. And because of that, he was not considered by Yitzchak a candidate for the blessings of the material success in this world.
for having nations come and bow down to him. Yavducha amin v'yishtachavu l'chol umim. Hevei gavir li'achecha, to be a master over his brother Esav. To have, again, kingdoms bow down to him, to be agriculturally successful. Yaakov wasn't a candidate for that. He was a tzaddik of another world. But he was not a man of power. And when Yaakov meets up with Rachel, there is where that can change. You see it from the first instant of Yaakov meeting up with Rachel. From him suddenly taking the stone and rolling it off of the well by himself, single-handedly. I mean, that's not the kind of miracle that you would expect from Yaakov Avinu. You know, that's muscle man. Yaakov? Oh, you do expect Yaakov Avinu to maybe turn to the shepherds and say, come on guys, you're quitting before the workday is over. Are you being honest? But the truth is, you don't even expect Yaakov Avinu to do that. Because Yaakov Avinu, yes, he is a man of truth, but does he go around telling people about the truth that they should fulfill? Did he do that with Lavan, for instance? No. Only when Lavan chased after him and accused Yaakov of stealing, and Yaakov Avinu said, I didn't. Go ahead, look. Then Yaakov Avinu finally gets that squeezed out of him. Did Yaakov Avinu do it with Shechem when they took Dina? Yaakov Avinu was quiet. Didn't say anything. And he was even upset at his children who made an issue out of it. So even this issue of honesty, that he's so confrontational about honesty, is unusual for Yaakov Avinu. But Yaakov Avinu is even filled with the love for Rachel that's described in the Pasuk. All of these things are new and unusual things about Yaakov Avinu. And they all come from Rachel. This mastery over kingdoms. And Chazal tell us, I mean, we don't have to look far. Yaakov Avinu is a shepherd. He's not a farmer. He can't claim the dew of the heavens and the fat of the land that his father was promised, that he was promised by his father. But Yosef's going to be the master of the agriculture of the whole region. The biggest farmer in the world. Yosef is going to have all of his brothers bow down to him while Yaakov is bowing down to Esav. Koyomar avdecha Yaakov. Yosef is going to have kingdoms serving him and kings bowing to him. Yosef gets that all. What Yaakov wouldn't have had by himself, Rachel would have brought out in him. But she didn't bring it out in him. The two of them together ended up producing. And so Yaakov realizes that there's a piece of him, a piece that would have been him, that could have been him, that was really Yosef. And on that level, he bows down to him. He bows down to Yosef. Oh, in Yaakov asking Yosef to go and bury him, look, think again now about that picture of all of the kings of the region coming and placing their crowns on the casket of Yaakov Avinu. Why? Because Yosef's crown was sitting there. All of that, finally, Yaakov Avinu, as a bar minan, as a person who's not alive, gets all of the kingdoms of the world to come and bow down to him. All because of Yosef. So Yaakov, to some degree, bows down to Yosef. He sits up for Yosef. Vayischazik Yisrael vayeshev al hamita. And perhaps, that's the pshat in the Dvorim B'Teilim. Perhaps that's what it means, Yaakov Avinu's dream, Yosef HaTzadik's dream,
where he says, Hashemesh vayoreach v'achad asar kechav mishach. The sun and the moon and the 11 stars are bowing down to me. So Yaakov Avinu says, what? Me and your mother and your brothers are going to come and bow down to you? Everybody knows that's impossible. Why? Because your mother's not alive. Oh, there's always something, some dorm material in the dream. Bilo will do it. It's true. It's not going to happen in the literal sense. But in a certain sense, when they bow down, when Yaakov bows down to Yosef, it's ani v'imcha. It's me and your mother. The whole issue is me and your mother. The whole issue is Yaakov and Rachel. And whereas Yaakov and Rachel could have been together, the ones, it turns out that they need that child. They need that child in order to make them Yaakov and Rachel. And in that sense, they are coming and bowing down to Yosef. Perhaps. Perhaps. Take it or leave it on that last one. But I think that there's an emes to it. I think that there could be a kernel of truth in that. But this is the dynamic from the beginning of the parsha. The dynamic from the beginning of the parsha. When Yaakov Avinu is now, right, he asked first Yosef, he says, this is what I need. This is what I need. Summons Yosef, I need you to go and take me and bury me in Eretz Canaan. Go and take me there. Right? But when Yosef comes for his needs, Yosef came to get a bracha. Yosef came for his needs, so Yaakov Avinu says, you know what it is with you? You're an av. I'm giving you formally that role of being my parallel, of being my equal. Because in some sense, of course, I need you. Which makes you not only my equal, but it makes me to some degree, therefore, needing you, deferential to you. That's the way the playing field is reset here in the beginning of Parshas Vayechi. Yaakov Avinu is dying, and Yosef HaTzadik is going to live on. What Yosef adds to the mix to this power of bringing this kayach, this strength to the world. Putting together the spirituality of Yaakov Avinu with the strength in the material world which Rachel brought, which becomes manifest in Yosef, is of course in many ways the critical difference between Kol Yisrael and Golos and Kol Yisrael and Geula. See, in Golos, we're supposed to sometimes often have the greatest spiritual strength. The greatest spiritual strength. In Golos, Jews build. What do we build? We build shuls. We build yeshivas. Right? We build in listening, we build in spirituality. We're in Golos, we're in somebody else's land. We don't build in the material world. We build the spiritual world. That's what it's about. That's the kayach which the Jewish people generate in Golos, is the building of the spiritual world. Right? Either we're going to build for them, for the nation under whom we are meshuvah, but anything that we build for ourselves, we build it only Baruchias. Geula, in a period of Geula, is when indeed we take over the whole world. When every aspect of life is able to be engaged by Klal Yisrael, by the Jewish people. That's Yisrael Shriyim al Admas, and the Jewish people on their land, and the respect garnered from the nations of the world of Yavduch Amim Mishtachim B'l'chol Umim. Yosef brought that. We're far from that. So, to some degree, we have to wait. But to remember that while we wait, we're b'nei v'naitei aholim, yoshvei aholim, dwellers in tents, builders of tents, pitchers of tents, to strengthen ourselves in the Olam HaRuach. in the world of the spirit, so that someday it can be wedded to a success in the Elam HaGeshem, in the physical world, that will be able to bring indeed the crowns of all the nations to be put up, so to speak, in deference to ours. Yaakov, Vayichi Yaakov Eretz Mitzrayim. Yaakov lived in Eretz Mitzrayim. In a sense, that power which he got from Yosef brought him somehow to that different level that we hope, Bezos Hashem, we will achieve with Bias Gael Tzedek. And Chazal tell us that the children of Esav will only fall